All right, welcome back to Third String Podcast. We have the final NFL preview of the NFL season coming up. And this is all in advance of tonight's showdown between the Super Bowl champion, have to emphasize that, Eagles, and the Atlanta Falcons. And with me on the other line groaning as I declare the Super Bowl champion, Philadelphia Eagles, is Pete LeCleod. Pete, welcome back to Third String.
I'm going to go back to January and listen to how many times he referred to the Super Bowl winning Philadelphia Eagles.
Every time I mention the Eagles, I have to mention the Super Bowl victory.
Man. Is it like a royalty thing? Like, what are we doing there?
No, we talked about this. It's how long you have to gloat after a Super Bowl championship. And we established that that in football, you can gloat for 3 years after a championship.
And my Capitals only got six months.
Correct. Yes.
That was my big takeaway.
Yes. Hockey, you can only gloat for 6 months. Yes. It's, you know, I don't make the rules, but there it is. okay. So AFC, NFC East. Should we go start with AFC here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So let's start with the Buffalo Bills. I have a question for you, Pete, on the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
What in the world is Sean McDermott doing?
Boy, there is the question of a lifetime this year. You know, we questioned them last year when he benched Terod. Got
yes.
it right, in case you're wondering.
There you go, Terod.
And then threw five picks in the first half. But is this team just rebuilding, or is this team just so inept right now that it's,
I mean,
it's just unknowable?
Yeah, if this is rebuilding, then I would hate to see what it was like when you were not rebuilding and you were just in a dumpster fire. Because, as you mentioned, Nathan Peterman is the starting quarterback for week one. They announced that earlier this week. So Nathan Peterman is the quarterback. He of the five interceptions in the first half of his NFL debut last year after the benching of Terod Taylor. Not only did they bench Terod briefly before realizing their dreadful mistake and starting Nathan Peterman, they then traded away Terod to Cleveland, basically placing all of their faith in their first round pick, Josh Allen, the same first round pick who's not actually starting week one. Yep. So, you know, riddle me this. So that's the first thing. The here are their key offseason acquisitions. Are you ready for this?
Oh, I'll set my stopwatch because I expect this to take a while.
Yes. Center Russell Bodine. Okay. Safety Raphael Bush. Wide receiver Corey Coleman, who, by the way, is no longer on the team. Yep. Cornerback Vontae Davis. Cornerback Philip Gaines. Running back Chris Ivory. There's a young gun for you. Wide receiver Jeremy Curley. Defensive tackle star Lotu Lele. Quarterback AJ McCarron, who's also no longer on the team. They traded off McCarron to Oakland because they're so confident in their quarterback room, apparently. Defensive end Trent Murphy. Offensive tackle Marshall Newhouse. Is there anybody in that list who to you is a game changer?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so as a Bills fan, or if I was a Bills fan, fortunately, I am so thankful that I'm not. But if I was, I would be looking at this just thinking, what in the world is Sean McDermott's plan? Why is he dismantling every part of our team that works? Why is he and the GM, I shouldn't place all the blame on McDermott, but why are they trading away our little bit of stability here, and then trading four guys like Corey Coleman, who we're not even going to keep? This makes no sense to me. And I have no unique insights on what we'll see on the field from Buffalo this year, because I just don't understand what the front office is doing in any part of this.
I mean, the ineptitude in Buffalo right now, at least perceived to us lay people, is that I think the Bills, could very well be the next Cleveland Browns. And I think the Browns are finally starting to turn a corner.
I think you might be right.
See how it goes this year. But you just look at the long-term, or lack thereof, long-term moves that the Buffalo Bills are making, and it doesn't check. It's like they're playing fantasy football, and they're not playing real football, that they're just adding guys off the waiver wire and making last-minute trades when they're not really thinking it through.
Right.
I think the only positives that are coming out of Buffalo right now is I thought that they've had a couple okay draft classes, and I think they've done some good stuff for their defense. But at the end of the day, if you don't have a competent guy under center, you don't have a real go-to running back. LeSean McCoy, I would argue, is probably 2 to 3 years past his prime at this point.
Yeah.
And then who else do you have on offense? Kelvin Benjamin, who was good in Carolina, not great, and now we hear that he hated Carolina. And you just wonder how many of these ragtag kind of thrown together pieces can actually stick together and make a real team up there, because there's just so much flux and so much uncertainty and so little foresight that you you just wonder what's the long-term plan up here in Buffalo.
Right.
Are they just waiting out this year and hoping that the 2019 draft class at quarterback is going to be more solid? Are they waiting for their big running back to come up through the system? What are they doing?
Yeah, I really don't know. And like I said, I have no great insights on their on-field performance. I think that the Bills will be really bad this year. And I expect them to be at the bottom or close to the bottom of the AFC East. The only team that I think could compete with them for being the worst team in the AFC East is the next team we should talk about, which is the Miami Dolphins. And I think, normally we do storyline and X factor, but to me, the storyline for the Dolphins, the storyline for the Bills, I think we establish, is what in the world are they doing? The storyline for the Dolphins is exactly how bad will they be, because they've let so many key guys go ahead and walk. This is, head coach Adam Gase trying to remake the Dolphins to his liking. I assume he has a vision. I should assume the same for McDermott. I assume these guys have a plan and have some sort of internal logic to what they're doing, but it's not clear from the outside. I mean, the Dolphins traded away Jay Ajayi to the Eagles, the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles last year. And then, they let Sue walk. They let Jarvis Landry walk. They let Mike Pouncey walk. You mentioned Pouncey going to the Chargers there. Lost Cody Parkey, Julius Thomas, Lawrence Timmons. I mean, so much key talent has fled this Dolphins team. And they did what? They made up for it by bringing in Danny Amendola, the postseason wonder boy of the New England Patriots, or running back Frank Gore, who, don't get me wrong, I love Frank Gore, but, speaking of a running back who's past his prime.
He's 35.
Yeah.
I mean, how is he still able to walk?
Yeah, you're not going to get good production out of Frank Gore this year. So how bad will the Dolphins be, I think, is the storyline there. I guess if there were an X factor, it would just be Ryan Tannehill, right? Back healthy, yeah. Presumably. Hopefully he stays that way. The Cutler experiment was a disaster, as many of us predicted it would be last year.
Yep.
So Tannehill's back. Maybe he can work some magic. I like Tannehill. I don't think he's a great quarterback, but I think he's fine enough. So there's the X factor, but to me, the question is really, how bad will the Dolphins be?
Yeah, I've also got him sitting third in the division. I think Ryan Tannehill has shown a couple flashes of brilliance. I see maybe a guy like Kenny Stills being able to bail him out and make some plays. Like you said, Danny Amendola is good for a couple slant passes, I guess. Frank Gore, in theory, can catch some checkdowns coming out of the backfield. But yeah, they... Much like the Miami Marlins, when we were talking back in March, I mean, they were just sell, sell, sell this year. That it's got to be hard to be a fan of this team right now. And I'm a Redskins fan, and I'm saying it's got to be hard to be a fan of the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
I just, again, don't know what the long-term goal is, other than Adam Gase is supposed to be this quarterback whisperer, and he's supposed to be this big offensive guru. I mean, remember, there were times when they were comparing him to Sean McVay in terms of his ability to run a hybrid offense and do something. And obviously that hasn't worked out so far. But yeah, I don't really know what to think of Miami, other than I think my bold prediction for this Miami team is they're going to steal one away from the Patriots in New England this year.
Oh, man. Wow.
I think that will be the lone bright spot for the Adam Gase-led Miami Dolphins.
Well, that would be quite a bright spot. That'd be a bright spot for most of America, I think.
I'm hoping.
Should we use that to segue into talk about the Patriots?
Expert-level segue there, my friend. Good transitions. Good transition.
America's least favorite team.
Evil Empire?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the Patriots, to me... I think the story here, regardless of whether or not we want this to be the story, this is going to be the story, and you probably know where I'm going at this. Tom versus time. Tom Brady is the face of the Patriots, and he's universally fawned over by the media for being the greatest quarterback to ever walk planet Earth. Perhaps, in fact, the greatest human to ever walk planet Earth. But to me, I think the Patriots are not actually good on the roster this year. They're really, really thin at wide receiver. Chris Hogan is basically headlining their wide receiver core, which includes names like Cody Hollister and Darren Andrews, guys who are so unknown that they don't even have linked player pages on Pro Football Reference. And that's sort of, on and on down the list. Of course, they have Philip Dorsett and Julian Edelman, but Edelman's suspended for 4 games this season. So to me, this is not Patriots as usual. This is a team that is struggling. Their first round pick, Isaiah Wynn, is out on injured reserve with a leg injury. To me, I think it's going to be hard for Belichick and Brady, Tom versus Time, to sustain the success that the New England fan base is used to seeing. And if they do, it'll only be because the AFC East, as we've talked about, this is a disaster. I mean, they have the privilege of playing the Bills and Dolphins and Jets twice every year. And they've had that privilege for a long time. And that's only one reason why the Patriots are perennially in the playoffs. So to me, this is just a question of how overrated the Patriots are. What do you think?
I agree they're overrated. I don't know if I'm willing to go out on a limb and say that they're going to lose the division. And I think that's probably our next conversation when we talk about the Jets. I think losing Julian Edelman hurts. But don't forget, this Patriot team always seems to start the year 2-2. I don't think they've ever gone 1-3, but they always have a really mediocre first four games. Remember, I think it was back in 2014 when they got blown out on Monday Night Football, and everyone said this is the end of the Patriot dynasty.
Right.
And then what did they do? They won the Super Bowl against the Seahawks there in January.
Well, and of course, last year they lost their first game to the Chiefs and then went on to play in the Super Bowl against the Super Bowl champion Eagles.
Oh, that's three. You're done. you met your quota. That's three. It's going to be hard for you when we talk about the NFC East here coming up.
It will, so I know,
But I'm not as swayed by the Patriots having issues early on, just because it's kind of the Patriot way to start slow and then gain a lot of steam down the stretch.
Yeah,
and,
that's fair.
And just like you said, take advantage of a very weak division that has been weak at this point for years. When was the last time this division was competitive at the top? Was it when we were talking about Patriots-Jets with Rex Ryan when he was the coach?
No.
Sitting back there in what, 2010, 2011?
Yeah, it wasn't even the Rex Ryan Jets, I don't think. Rex Ryan never had that Jets in a true contending position.
I think
the last time the AFC East was competitive was when Doug Flutie was quarterback in Buffalo.
fair enough. Early 90s, right?
That's right.
Early 2000s. Yeah.
Those
were the good old days for Buffalo. Not like now. Terod back. That would have been smarter. But neither
my sister-in-law is a Bills fan. I just feel so bad for her.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
But again, I'm
I should send her a card
fan,
or
only
something for the
sorry.
Start of football
only
season.
Only kind
of
sorry.
Yeah.
But I'm not as convinced that it's over for the Patriots, just because, like you said, they have Father Time. I think Gronk deciding not to go to all of his reality shows like we thought he was going to go to could move him in the right step. I think he's only got two or three seasons left tops before he finally has the concussion that knocks him out, or the knee injury that knocks him out.
Were you sad that you're not going to see, at least this season, you're not going to see Rob Gronkowski on The Bachelor?
Devastated.
Yeah.
Devastated.
Yeah.
You know how big of a fan of The Bachelor I am.
Definitely. There's what is in it? I've never actually seen The Bachelor, but doesn't The Bachelor get like a rose at the end or something? Or like he gives a rose to the person he picks or something?
I can't believe you're acting like you don't know what happens on The Bachelor.
I don't
you know
actually
just
know.
As well as I do that they give out roses every week.
Oh, every week? Do they give roses to people who stay? Or is it like okay, that's the staying gift?
I think you are presented a rose when you are going to stick around. And
okay,
if you don't
gotcha.
Get a rose, you go home.
So it's not like a condolence. It's not like, I'm sorry, here's a rose. Good day.
Maybe okay. It is for everyone watching it. But
all right.
I think Gronk sticking around is probably a step in the right direction for them. Don't forget, they still have Steven Gostkowski, who... yeah, I can only get him 3 points or 1 point in any given sitting, but he's one of the best kickers in the history of the game.
He doesn't miss.
Tom Brady is Tom Brady. And I think their defense is still okay. That I look at some of the defensive weapons there, and as much as they might be struggling on the outside, especially without Julian Edelman early on offensively, I think the defense, where I am still pretty high on guys like Patrick Chung, I think they'll hang in there and at least keep the Patriots competitive until that roster finally gets back to kind of where they want to be.
You're probably right. I think my my dislike of the Patriots often clouds my otherwise reasonable analysis. So you're probably right, as much as I hate to admit it.
I'm just not willing, while Tom Brady is the quarterback, to ever count the Patriots out. And
right.
It's not because I want them to be in. It's because I just feel like I know better. That I don't want to be surprised when I think this is the year that
right.
the Patriots are going to fall. We're going to have a new world order in the AFC East and the AFC overall. And it just never happens. It's just always disappointing. So
I mean, you're right. How many times have we counted them out and regretted doing that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's finish up the AFC East here. Let's talk about the Jets briefly. The storyline, I think, is the continuation of a years-long rebuild, and it looks like that rebuild might be in its final stages. Darnold was just announced as the starting quarterback. They're clearly very confident in his abilities to lead that team. They were very thrilled when they got him with the third overall pick in the draft last year. I think Todd Bowles is a really good coach, overlooked and underrated, but I think he's actually really good. I'm excited to see what he can do this year. And this is my bold pick of the segment here, but I think he could be leading a surprise pick to win the division. I think the Jets, if they can split their series with the Patriots and go 1-1, I think there's a real chance for them to actually win the AFC East. I think the Patriots are not going to be shut out of the playoffs. I mean, there'll be a wild card at least there for the Patriots, but I think the Jets could actually do it.
Awesome. That would be a lot of fun to watch because it means we're finally getting some competition in this division, which I agree. Todd Bowles is really underappreciated up there in New York. I thought the Jets picking up Sam Darnold, who will not set the world on fire this year, but will be a good leader and a good spot of continuity on a team who has gone through something like 15 quarterbacks in the last 10 years. I think that'll be really, really good. And I agree that Sam Darnold is the future. I'll tell you what I also like with the Jets that I think could really make a difference this year is I think the addition of Isaiah Crowell, who's a workhorse. I mean, the amount of carries that he has pulled in every year in Cleveland before he moved over to New York. I think his ability to take some pressure off Sam Darnold and the passing game is going to really, really help. I still don't think they have enough kind of tools outside the numbers in the wide receiving core to really make that offense explosive. But I think guys like Terrell Pryor will help him out a little. Terrell Pryor obviously was a disaster in Washington.
Right.
And I think a lot of that was the system in Washington. I think he'll be okay in New York. What scares me about this team, if I'm just looking at the schedule right now,
is
in the first 11 days of the season, they have three games. So September 10th, they'll play the Lions. The 16th, they'll play the Dolphins. And the 20th, they'll play the Cleveland Browns. So it could be a really, really great first three games. If they can go 2-1 or heck, even 3-0, they're going to be sitting so pretty for the rest of the season. But I'm worried that with a young team and a team who's already looking at a lot of injuries, this could get a little dicey for them early on, and they could be digging themselves out of a hole pretty quick.
You know, I know you're looking at the beginning of the schedule, Lions, Dolphins, Browns, but I sort of look at that as a perk for the Jets, because I think beating the Lions, Dolphins, and Browns in that order is very doable, and I think they could go 3-0. Yeah. To me, I'm more concerned about the back end of the schedule. I mean, if they're able to build out a one-game lead, for example, on the Patriots through the first 3 weeks of the season through that Browns matchup, they could potentially sustain that while they play teams like the Jags, Broncos, Colts, Bears, Dolphins, Bills again. But at the end of the season, they play Texans, Packers, Patriots. Those are going to be three tough matchups for them. They have a slim lead going into week 15, that's going to be something that's really tough to sustain over the Patriots, especially since they play the Patriots at the end. So I like the possibility of setting up a winner-take-all week 17 game there. But I think that the back end of that schedule is going to be pretty problematic for the Jets as well.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be, this is one of my probably three or four teams I'm really going to pay attention to.
Yeah.
This season, I think the ceiling is pretty high, but the floor is also pretty low based on how young this roster is right now.
Right. Totally agree. Well, should we move to the NFC East?
Yeah, we had to circle back to the division you and I watched the most.
I saved it for last because, yeah, we're most familiar with it. And I think we have lots of things to say, but because we're short on time, I think we should be economical with our words. But let's start with the Giants.
Yeah, the New York Football Giants, yep, who obviously came off one of the most disastrous seasons in franchise history last year.
Really bad.
The drama around firing Ben McAdoo, who probably should have gone to Philadelphia, but neither here nor there.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've heard the story, right? That he was in the limo on his way to Philadelphia and Philly was going to offer him the job. And then he got a call from the Giants front office saying, turn the limo around, we're going to hire you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just think, that could have been your future.
Oh, my goodness.
Friend. That could have been your future.
It's so terrible.
But between that, the drama around when Eli Manning was starting, when he wasn't starting, I think they made a good pickup in getting Saquon Barkley in the draft, but I am afraid, much like we talked about when we talked about the Rams, that they could really push Saquon Barkley too far.
Yep.
Because he's the young, fresh legs, and they're going to want to give him 30 carries a game early on, and I think they
and he's going to want that too, because when you're a 21-year-old kid, that's what you want. You want to be the hero, and it's hard to pace yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean the NFC East is, I think, going to be one of the most cannibalizing divisions in the NFL this year. That while I don't think all four teams are competitive to win it, I think all four teams are competitive to beat each other any given Sunday.
Right.
Honestly. And I think Eli at this point is the weakest quarterback in the division. That honestly, I'm playing fantasy football, I'll take Eli Manning over Dak Prescott. But if I'm looking for a playmaker and a guy who will extend with his legs, a guy who can kind of outrun that linebacker who's coming in on the blitz, I'm looking at Dak Prescott. I'm looking at, obviously, Carson Wentz. I'm even looking at Alex Smith before I look at Eli Manning right now. And you just can't win the big game with a quarterback like that. Maybe you could argue the Broncos did it back when they won it all with Peyton back in 2015. But they're going to have to rely so much on Odell Beckham to do what Odell Beckham does, which makes freakish catches.
Yep.
They're going to have to rely on Sterling Sharp, and they're going to have to rely on Saquon Barkley. And otherwise, I don't see a lot of other guys for them to hang their hat on. So I've got the Giants sitting fourth in the division this year.
Yes, I do as well. I think it's going to be a rough year for them. And the Giants are, I mean, it's not frustrating for me as an Eagles fan, of course, but as a football fan, it's frustrating to watch the Giants because you have Eli Manning, who is a talented quarterback. His best years are certainly behind him, but he's talented and he has these weapons like Odell Beckham and now Saquon Barkley. But it just seems like so much of that is squandered in the way the Giants have run their offense over the last year or two. And I'm not sure if that will change. I mean, I think Pat Shurmur is a good offensive mind. We saw what he did with Case Keenum in Minnesota last year. So yeah. he can very likely come in there and dial up some things. But I'm more concerned with the roster instability. You have the stars at the top, like Odell Beckham, who just got the highest paid wide receiver contract in history. You have Saquon Barkley, who is positioning himself to have a year sort of like Zeke Elliott did in 2016, his first year in the league. So some really key pieces there. But then you have the fact that the New York Giants today waived Davis Webb, who is their third round pick in 2017 and their backup quarterback. So they waived him. They've just parted ways with him post camp. And they play six different waiver claims, which means six people on their 53-man roster are going to be players who were not with the Giants at any point in training camp. So you crunch the numbers, it's 11% of the roster is going to be brand new for week one, which is really just not a recipe for stability, not a recipe for success. I'm not sure what's going on in the front office in New York. Maybe it's because Dave Gettleman is out on medical leave while he receives treatment for cancer. So maybe that's contributing to the instability. But something's not jiving in New York, I think. This is not their year. This is going to be another year of rebuilding. I think they'll beat their last season total of 2 wins. But not by much. I think 6 wins is probably about the ceiling for this Giants team.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at some of the youth on this team this year, coupled with a bad locker room last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like this stuff is going to change overnight based on the personalities they brought in and the personalities who didn't leave like we expected. I kind of expected Eli Apple to be somewhere else after his drama last year. I really thought Odell Beckham was going to leave the Giants and go find
I thought so too, yeah.
So some of these guys who the drama seems to follow are still there. And boy, obviously I've never been in an NFL locker room, but if I had so many locker room issues last year and I bring in so many rookies this year based on how many guys they've signed in the free agent market, as well as how many they drafted, I'm a little nervous for how this team is going to gel together.
Right. Yeah, and by the way, I said they had 2 wins last year. I'm sorry. They had 3. I forgot they beat the Redskins in that meaningless week 17 game, in which Eli Manning threw for 121 passing yards.
You didn't actually want to correct yourself. You just wanted to point out they beat the Redskins,
I'm sorry.
Didn't you?
No, to be honest, I really just wanted to point out the 121 passing yards.
Okay, I'll allow it then. I'll allow it.
All right, we talked about Dallas a little bit. The storyline here for me is, how hot is Jason Garrett's seat? You and I watch All or Nothing. We still need to do a special pod on that because there's a lot to talk about. But
yeah.
Not an NFL-level coach is my quick takeaway on Jason Garrett. And if the Cowboys can't put together an NFC East winning or close to it campaign this year, Jason Garrett has to be gone, right? I mean, at some point, Jerry Jones has to acknowledge this is not the guy to lead my franchise back to relevance. Am I wrong on this? Are he and Jason Garrett just super tight and he's never going to let Garrett go?
No, I get the feeling like Jerry Jones has been very distracted the past couple of years as he's been fighting the NFL, fighting Roger Goodell. You look at everything that's gone on in the NFL over the last 3 to 4 years between all of the drama with the NFL front office, with CTE. I almost think Jerry Jones hasn't been able to focus enough right. to fire Jason Garrett to put another guy in the seat. I'm sure he's thought about firing Jason Garrett, but we haven't seen any other coaches really on the market who I think are appealing enough to kind of hold down the star and make something happen. So I totally agree with you that he's on the hot seat. I think both he and Jay Gruden, and we can get into the Redskins here in a second, are on the hot seat if they're not in the playoffs this year. So I expect more coaching changes here in the NFC East. But what worries me if I'm a Dallas fan right now is the lack of really wide receiver presence outside of Allen Hurns after they lost Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant obviously on a downhill slide.
Right.
I think it was definitely time for him to leave.
Well, and the All or Nothing documentary made that pretty clear, too. He seemed like he was not a good presence in the locker room.
No, and I think he was very interested in leaving Dallas once he realized that big market was not going to work out for him. So I think it's interesting how much he's kind of messing with the Cleveland Browns right now about whether he will sign there or not. But they just don't have a lot of weapons outside of Allen Hurns, a wide receiver, and then obviously Ezekiel Elliott as their running back. And they're going to rely very, very heavily on Zeke, but don't forget how bad that offensive line was
right.
last year and how much that could really be their undoing if they can't set Zeke up for what he really needs. Hopefully, if you're a Dallas fan, he's here all 16 games this year. There was a lot of drama last year with suspensions and everything, but they need Zeke to have another Pro Bowl season, or in my opinion, this offense is going to be dead in the water.
Yeah, I totally agree. You mentioned all their injuries. I think 3/5 of their line is out with some sort of injury, including Travis Frederick, who is their center. He has, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, but I think it's like Guillain-Barré syndrome, but it's an autoimmune yeah. disease that basically gives you a chronically weak and painful back because it affects your nervous system. He'll probably be fine. He'll probably make a full recovery. We really hope he does, obviously. Yep. But the point here is that the prognosis is pretty uncertain, and it could be something that plagues him for 12 months. Could be something that he's better from, like at the end of this month, you know, based on my cursory reading about this syndrome. But that's a problem when your center goes down, and it's a problem when your quarterback is someone who needs a strong offensive line and your running back needs a strong offensive line to make things happen. And I think that's what we saw in 2016 when Dak and Zeke combined and both had separate NFL MVP cases. It was because in large part, the offensive line was able to give them the time to work their magic and do their thing. And if they can't do that, then Dallas is, I don't want to say dead in the water, but they're going to have a tough uphill climb if they want to make a dent in the NFC East.
Yeah, I think their defense is also going to kind of live and die on the health of Sean Lee, which, again, yeah. we keep going back to what we watched with All or Nothing, but Sean Lee is chronically injured, it seems, and that just, they don't really have a good way to hold down a solid middle linebacker or even a linebacking core when he's so iffy.
It wasn't even like linebacking core. It really seemed like in the All or Nothing series, it was about like the defense. Like the defense was without a captain and helmless when Sean Lee was not in there. Or Snake Lee, as Dez Bryant says, right?
Yeah. Dez Bryant, such a credible force. But yeah, they couldn't even communicate plays from the sidelines about
right.
Sean Lee, that as they're putting rookies in the position, they couldn't flex. They couldn't adjust like they needed to. So Sean Lee's been in the league since 2010 at this point. You would think the Cowboys would have figured out that how good he was at Penn State and how good he was early on for the Cowboys. You got to surround these guys with some other talent.
You got to
just expect
yeah.
one guy to hold it down. So I think Jerry World could be an interesting place this year if Sean Lee doesn't turn out like they're hoping he does. And if Allen Hurns doesn't have a fantastic year at wide receiver.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, let's move to Redskins and Eagles real quick. So these are our teams. We know a lot more about them. So how about you just tell me what I should be looking at as a casual Redskins observer this season? What are the keys to watch for?
So I actually, unlike a lot of the Washington media right now, I like the pickup of Adrian Peterson. Obviously, he's
really okay. Interesting.
I do. He's a textbook example of being beyond his prime. I realize
yes.
that. But what the Redskins have not had in the last 5 or 6 years, since really Alfred Morris broke onto the scene, is a solid multiple down running back. And obviously AP gets hurt a lot. So if he gets hurt, this all goes out the window. But I think AP can at least give them the stability at the running back position where he can take a little bit of pressure off Alex Smith. I think Alex Smith is one of the best game managers in the game. But what I lost when Kirk Cousins went to Minnesota, obviously they signed Alex Smith before Kirk Cousins left, but the Redskins made that decision.
The writing was on the wall, clearly, yeah.
No sympathy to the Redskins for this, but I think they got a better game manager, but they lost a significant amount of talent. That Kirk Cousins, not a playmaker on the level of Dak Prescott or really any of these mobile quarterbacks, even guys like Russell Wilson, but Kirk Cousins could make plays downfield, and that is what I'm worried about with Alex Smith. He's a great fantasy football quarterback, but he's not necessarily your 10-11 game winner. So I'm really, really interested to see what happens on offense, where I think the stats are going to be good, but I don't think in pressure situations the offense is going to need to be, or is where it really needs to be. I think Jay Gruden is in trouble if they don't make the playoffs. I think not only is the Washington fan base pretty disappointed in how this has gone, but I think that front office is in such disarray that they're going to clean house after this season, unless it's a playoff caliber season.
Yeah, I think I think Bruce Allen is in competition with Brandon Bean of the Bills to see who's doing the worst job running an NFL team.
Yeah. The other thing that I think you really should watch with the Redskins is I think the NFC East, more than any other division top to bottom in the NFL this year, is probably the heaviest run offense we see, whether it's Saquon Barkley in New York, whether it's Zeke sitting in Dallas, or whether it's Jay Ajayi in Philadelphia. I don't think the Redskins have the hogs up front to slow down an efficient running game.
Okay.
I think an up-tempo offense is going to beat them, and I think a heavy run offense has the potential to beat them. So that's what really makes me nervous as a Redskins fan looking at this team. But then again, I like some of the talent that they've put outside the numbers. I think they've got a pretty good wide receiving core. I think they've got a stronger secondary than a lot of people are giving them credit for. So that's where I think a run-heavy offense could be the Redskins' weakness, and not necessarily a pass-heavy offense could be the Redskins' undoing. So I'm interested to see how that defense gels. They're just so young that it could be problematic, but it could be better going forward. So
yeah.
I feel like a Cubs fan from the early 2000s and always saying next year in Washington, but I'm hoping that they can kind of build on this year.
So despite Bruce Allen's best efforts, the pieces are in place for success in the future is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think if they can shore up the running game in the next 2 to 3 years, I think they could be on their way.
So one question on the running game then, what's the state of their offensive line? Because you mentioned that AP could be a serviceable three down running back, I guess. Two questions. First, what's the state of the offensive line? And second, what would be serviceable for you? Like, what's the minimum yards per attempt that AP needs to produce on a consistent basis to be the answer for this season?
I think in the NFL, you're looking for, really, I'd say 3.5 yards per carry.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where he needs to be.
He was basically just under that last year with Arizona, so...
Well, and I still think the Skins will be helped out by guys like Chris Thompson. Unfortunately, sure. Yeah. Between his injury last year and just kind of how he's built, he's not your three-down back. And the Redskins really tried to make him their three-down back, and that just didn't work out. But I think he could be a great check-down weapon, and I think he could
I think of Chris Thompson as kind of like a Corey Clement for Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I think he's a little bit bigger, and so he can run it up the gut a little bit more effectively, perhaps, than Thompson, but he's still a really good pass catching back. So he's not a three down guy. He's like a utility knife like Thompson.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the offensive line is going to be okay. I think it'll be enough to kind of keep Alex Smith safe. I don't think he'll get sacked as much as Kirk Cousins. I think he's got a quicker release than Kirk Cousins does. So I think that'll help him as well. That will speed up that kind of internal clock. But yeah, it's the lack of a true running game that hopefully Adrian Peterson, for my sake, can figure out. But yeah, I think the Redskins are on their way, but certainly not there yet.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that Alex Smith doesn't have too much of a problem transitioning from, you know, Kelsey to Jordan Reed and you know, Tyreek Hill to whoever who's the Tyreek Hill equivalent on the Redskins.
Jameson Crowder probably.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so like Hill to Crowder and then Kamara to AP. Like there are some differentials. I mean, I like Crowder, but there are some differentials there. Like Jordan Reed's great when he's or good when he's healthy, but he can't stay healthy, and Kelsey's a workhorse. So you know, I think Alex Smith could have some problems in that transition, but I'm rooting for him. I like Alex Smith.
Same. Same. Here's hoping. So tell me about your Eagles. I'm going to say it this time, not you, your Super Bowl champion.
Yes, that's right.
Eagles.
Thanks, Pete. I'm not going to spend too much time here. I think there's a lot we could talk about. There's a lot we will talk about in the weeks and months to come this season. But we're sort of running over time here. So let me just give you a couple things that are interesting. So the first is there's always going to be talk of the Super Bowl hangover. And I think that's very real, not in the sense of this sort of like mythological, psychological effect, but just because there are a lot of lingering injuries that the Eagles are dealing with. So Brandon Graham, the guy who had that 2 minute and 16 second strip sack of Tom Brady in the Super Bowl in the fourth quarter, he had ankle surgery in the offseason. He's still kind of getting back to 100%. He's supposed to be good for week one, but you know, there's always going to be a little bit of a rehab curve when that happens. Alshon Jeffrey had shoulder surgery, and so he's not going to be good to go potentially till week four. And then, of course, Carson Wentz, the Eagles today named Nick Foles as their starter for week one. So Carson Wentz is still not cleared for contact coming off his ACL, LCL tear. So I think the injury bug lingers. Of course, Jason Peters as well. He's a 35-year-old left tackle, and he's one of the best in the league. But he went down with an ACL tear last year as well. And I think there's serious questions about whether or not he'll be able to play up to the level that we've come to expect from Jason Peters. Or is this sort of like the beginning of the decline for his performance? On that note, though, there's another interesting storyline that everyone should be interested in. There's an Australian rugby player named Jordan Mailata. And he was signed by the Eagles earlier this spring to basically come in and learn football. And he's started to play in the left tackle position. And he's looked you know, up and down in preseason games. But he also shows a lot of promise, so much so that the Eagles kept him on their 53-man, even though he'd not played a single snap of football in his life prior to this year. So they're looking at him as someone who could be the Jason Peters of the future, which is pretty exciting because the guy's 21 years old. And if the Eagles found a good one here, they could have their left tackle of the future for the next 15 years, which is pretty cool to think about. So lots of cool storylines. I think it'll be fun to see what Doug Peterson can cook up. He's, of course, missing his offensive coordinator who went to coach the Colts. That's Frank Reich. And his quarterback coach, who a lot of people thought was responsible for much of Carson Wentz's and Nick Foles' success, in John DeFilippo, who's now the offensive coordinator in Minnesota, replacing the former Eagles offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur, who was the OC of Minnesota under Mike Zimmer and is now, of course, the head coach of the Giants. So it all sort of comes full circle. It'll be interesting to see all that play out. And I don't need to talk more about the Eagles. Like I said, we will in the weeks and months ahead, but that's kind of it, Pete. Any questions for me on the Eagles?
So I was gonna ask you, so your defense had a lot of changeover, this offseason. You lost guys like Vinnie Curry, Bo Allen.
Right.
But you still have guys like Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham. Do you see what is an older defensive unit with a lot of changeover being as dominant as they were last year? I think Carson Wentz gets so much credit last year, but your defense was really on point and kept you in a lot of games early on before Carson Wentz really got clicking. Do you think that could be an issue for the Eagles, or are you pretty confident in the defense this year?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think Vinnie Curry and Bo Allen were good, but they were sort of rotational guys, and I don't think that they were the impetus for a lot of the defensive line success. And I think that the analysis that you just talked about misses out on the fact that Derek Barnett's had another year and offseason of development. So he was a rookie last year. He did very well, but it really wasn't until the last few games of the season that he started to really come alive and be able to put pressure on quarterbacks against good offensive lines. So I'm excited to see his development. It'll basically be Barnett and Graham rushing from the edge. I think that'll be exciting. It's not Ingram, Bosa, or, you know, Von Miller, Bradley Chubb levels of excitement, but there's still a lot of potential there. And then, of course, Fletcher Cox, one of the highest paid defensive tackles in the NFL, always going to be a threat. And then people also forget that Sidney Jones, our second round pick from 2 years ago, who had an Achilles injury all last year, he's back. He's going to be playing in the secondary as a corner. And Jordan Hicks, our linebacker who went down early last season, also back. So I think the defense is actually set up to potentially be even better than they were last year, despite some of the offseason losses.
Okay. Well, sounds like I should be worried as a Redskins fan.
But, well,
hey, we'll see what happens.
I mean, I don't know about you. It probably goes without saying that I'm picking the Eagles to win the NFC East. But I don't think they're going to be a 13-3 team like they were last year. I think we're looking at maybe 10-6 for this Eagles squad. And I think the beginning of the season with Nick Foles in could be a little rough because Nick Foles is a high variance QB who doesn't really show up when the game's not big.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the Eagles definitely benefited last year from the Giants being so bad, the Redskins being pretty inept.
Right.
Ezekiel Elliott being out in Dallas, that I think this division definitely will make it harder on the Eagles than they did last year. I still think the talent is best in Philly, but yeah, I agree. Probably a little down from 13-3, but still my winners right now on paper.
Yeah. Well, anything else to add to the NFC, AFC East pod, Pete?
No, I can't believe we got through all four of these divisions before this season started. So
I know. Good stuff.
Thanks for
doing it.
It's
a busy week of podcasting. Well, to our listeners, thanks so much for listening. Enjoy the kickoff of the NFL season later tonight. Eagles and Falcons. It's going to be good. Let us know what you think of this podcast or anything else we've said at Zach Crippen on Twitter or at Pete_LeCleed. You can also follow our other hosts at Shoulda Kept the JB is Ishan. He did not join us for this episode, but you can follow him there. And at The T Young is Taylor Young. He joins us here sometimes, but also hosts the Takes of the Game basketball podcast on the Third String Feed. So thanks so much for listening. And we'll be back next week to talk about NFL action. And also, we got to talk about some MLB stuff here because there's a lot of excitement going on, especially on the National League side of things. So stay tuned. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.